The calendar has flipped over to November, hard to believe. And typically I'm a person who hates that Thanksgiving gets skipped over now in culture for an immediate jump into Christmas after Halloween. But this year, I'm not cranky about it. I think it's because I live somewhere with actual seasons, so I feel the cold coming on and I see the bare trees and I think to myself, wow, maybe I'll have a white Christmas this year. There's actually a chance. So I thought I would go ahead and inaugurate holiday season here on Unsinkable with a conversation about a really cool Titanic related cookbook, the Titanic cookbook, and the Titanic is referring in this case to the 1997 movie. This is a cookbook by Veronica Hinkey, someone who, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know well already. She has been on the show 2 times before, once to discuss her first Titanic cookbook, Last Night on the Titanic, which was very much a history of the ship and recipes that went along a narrative history of the ship. And then she came on last year to discuss holiday party planning and a Titanic-themed party. And today, she has this new book, which is a cookbook based more on the movie and creating recipes around some of the characters and, of course, honoring the time period and the passengers of Titanic still as well. So I was very, very excited when she agreed to come on again. Way back over 2 years ago, Veronica was actually the very first guest who said yes to me. She took a chance on Unsinkable and she keeps returning. So very thankful and must be doing something right. Her work is so fun. Her cookbooks are just a dash of joy into your kitchen if you are a Titaniac. And so please, please, after you've listened to our talk, consider buying one or both of her wonderful cookbooks. I will make sure that all of Veronica's info is in the show notes for you to find her on socials and find, obviously, copies of those books. Her passion for Titanic is palpable in all that she does and says, and I just am it's a delight to be able to call her a friend. And before I get you to the interview, I wanted to share the recipe for something we talk about. And you can pause and write it down, or maybe just roll back to this after you've listened to the episode if you're interested in it. But during this interview, we talk about some fun drinks, and I talk about making a batch of a cocktail recipe that she had sent me from the new cookbook. But in the interview, I hadn't tried it yet. It was sitting in my fridge, and I hadn't tried it yet. And so I want to report now that it is incredible. It's called the Brandy Smash, and I think Veronica would be okay with me giving you the quick recipe right now. So to make a Brandy Smash, and this is in honor of Titanic the ship, Titanic the movie, the coming winter season, the coming holiday parties, I hope we all get to attend with joy. In honor of all of that, if you so choose to raise a glass in this way, the Brandy Smash. 3 leaves of fresh pineapple mint, 1/2 teaspoon of sugar, 1 cup lemon lime soda, aka Sprite, 1 fluid ounce of brandy, 1 orange twist, 1 maraschino or brandied cherry for garnish, and 2 fresh pineapple mint sprigs for garnish. Here's the recipe. It's super simple. Muddle the pineapple, mint, and sugar in a cocktail glass, preferably an ice cold one. Add crushed ice to the glass. Add the soda and the brandy and stir 20 to 30 seconds. Garnish with the orange twist, a cherry, and pineapple mint. And I can tell you, you can multiply these ingredients and amount however you would like. It batches into a nice pitcher for a block party or a party or just a Wednesday night. It batches well. And so there you go. If you're interested, I will get you right to the talk with Veronica. I wish I could raise a glass and cheers every single one of you for listening to the podcast and for following along the Unsinkable journey. I don't know. I just feel this wonderful sense of kind of floating on air, bringing such a fun episode to your feed. Unfortunately, there's so much darkness in the world right now. I can only hope that you and yours are happy and healthy and safe as you listen to this. And I will talk soon. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you to Veronica again. Here you go. All right, Veronica, welcome back for the third visit, your third visit to Unsinkable. You're the first three-peat guest on the show, which is really exciting. It sort of blows my mind that I've been doing this show long enough to have repeat guests. And it's just such a joyful experience whenever I get to talk to you about your work. So welcome back and tell listeners about your new cookbook. Before we dive into talking about some of the passengers and specific inspirations, this is a really big deal, the official Titanic cookbook. Let people know kind of what inspired you and what it encompasses.
Oh, Ellie, it's so good to talk with you again. Thank you again for this terrific opportunity to help share these stories. And with this project, the stories are shared through a cookbook with narrative, a little bit of narrative in the head notes and some wonderful historical information. There's three things that I really think that your listeners are going to want to know about this cookbook. One is the cookbook is truly dedicated to the 25th anniversary of the movie. Of course, James, you know, I say the movie, and there, as you and I know, there are several Titanic movies, but the one that is probably the most well-known is James Cameron's movie Titanic. And it's this past year has been its 25th anniversary. And so one of the main things I wanted to convey, I'm getting to point number two, is that incredible immigrant story that James Cameron told in the movie. And so there are recipes that are representative of many of the immigrant groups, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then thirdly, this is a book that I hope can be a guide for people for entertaining at home in a simplified way. So you don't have to make an 11-course elaborate first-class dinner. You can do some simple things that are just as wonderful as an acknowledgement of the Titanic stories.
I think that the thing that struck me when we, you know, we've obviously been in touch for a couple of years now, which is wonderful, but when we were specifically emailing about this talk and your new book, immediately the first thing that you mentioned to me was highlighting the immigrant stories, which, you know, is one of my favorite parts about doing this podcast. I think people forget that Titanic was an immigrant ship first and foremost. And you and I have talked a little bit about some of the third class recipes in the past, but this book is, I mean, inspired by the film characters and historical passengers. There's a lot of that here, a lot of the immigrant story. So I would love to start with unpacking a little bit of that. Tell me about, we talked about the tabbouleh recipe that's in the book, for example, represents the Syrians that were on board. I believe 150 Syrians that were on board, correct? Is that the right number?
That is correct. And it's an estimated number. Not nearly close to that number, of course, survived because most of them were in third class. And so I wanted to include a recipe for something that maybe some of the Syrian families would have tucked away in their knapsacks for that first day or two of the journey, even though they wouldn't have needed to, because Titanic was, if not the first, one of the first ships on which third class passengers did not need to bring their own food. Food was provided and tables and in a special dedicated dining area, which was one of the firsts aboard the Titanic. And yet I still think there probably were some Syrian families who probably tucked away some tabbouleh for the journey, and at least when they were getting on board the ship the first day. Tabbouleh is traditionally extremely parsley forward, which is one of the reasons I love it so much. I have this recipe. I wanted to really angle it more towards cauliflower because you can pulse it enough in your food processor to make it like a rice consistency to replace the bulgur, which is a little more gluten heavy. It has gluten in it, obviously. So this is a real plant forward tabbouleh, and not plant forward, but it's gluten free. So it's a wonderful tabbouleh recipe. And I used purple cauliflower for obviously the extra nutritional value. And also just, it's a pretty color. I wanted to include cauliflower in at least one of the recipes because Adolphe Selfeld, who was a first class passenger, wrote home to his wife Gertrude about the incredible lunch that he had on April 10th when he boarded in Southampton. And cauliflower was one of the things that he highlighted in his letter to Gertrude. So I thought, what can we do with cauliflower that's not just, you know, a cooked cauliflower alongside a main course? And this salad really integrates cauliflower well. And it's a light, refreshing, flavorful salad that also really acknowledges that Syrian story.
It's the little details. As long as I've been doing this podcast for a while and loving Titanic for much longer than that, but it's always the tiny details that get me. And when you said that, you know, they may have brought some tabbouleh on board. I think it's such a gorgeous sort of moment of, you know, if we visualize Titanic and we try to zoom in on the lives of individuals, in this case, in third class, in order to connect to the humanity of it, it's those little moments. Like you imagine a family boarding with tabbouleh, this part of their lives that is of the place that they're from and their family culture, and they're getting on the ship to go start a completely different life, but they're bringing parts of that with them. And I think, you know, your first book, Last Night on the Titanic, did that as well. Just highlights these little moments of food, because food is such a huge part of our lives every single day. And I think we see a lot of ourselves through food and we see other people through food. So it's really amazing I feel like every time we talk, we end up talking about passengers and details about their lives. And in terms of the immigrant story, I haven't had a chance to make it yet, but I know that there's an Italian recipe you mentioned that might be a little bit of a nod to Fabrizio from the film. Is that, and can you kind of talk about that? And then also, I would love to hear sort of your research process on that. You know so much about the passengers and the cultures that they're coming from in terms of food. So yeah, if you would also sort of walk us through kind of how you decide what to include when you're writing a book like this.
Oh, Ellie, I'm so glad that you brought up the story of Fabrizio, and it's one of my favorite scenes from the movie, of seeing Jack Dawson and his traveling companion who was from Italy, and just the way they interacted, and you know, you could just feel the hopes and dreams from them in seeing them getting on the ship together. And we don't see as much in the movie of Jack's traveling companion. We obviously see much more of him, but I wanted to kind of, you know, really acknowledge his story as well. And so just like, and even included a Wisconsin fish fry in honor of Jack coming from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. I also wanted to include one of the meals that would have been, you know, really something that Fabrizio was really accustomed to, which was pizza. And actually, pizza was just introduced around the time the Titanic sailed in Manhattan in many of the restaurants.
Yes, I want to hear you talk about this, because I even as a historian of this era have never studied that at all. So when you emailed me that, I'm so intrigued. Please, yes, tell us a little bit about the history of that.
Yes, believe it or not, pizza in America is not that old of a thing. I mean, it's about 112 years old now, because it was right around the same year that the Titanic sailed that it was introduced. And one of the restaurants, at least one of them, is still there that claims that they, you know, had the very first pizza ever. And it's pretty neat to think about that. And I wanted to do something kind of, you know, tied to the movie in so far as the actual recipe. So I give instructions for how to make a heart-shaped pizza to really tie it into the movie. So I hope people will have a chance to make that. And if you're having a movie party, your movie night or something, I definitely would encourage people to think about making that.
I feel like it's a perfect combination of recognizing sort of the romantic component and the nostalgic component of the movie that we all love. And I know from talking to listeners over the last couple of years, a vast majority of us, you know, are Ship people as well as the 1997 movie people. I mean, it's such a cultural touchstone. And I was so excited when I found out you were doing this, because for the longest time, I've thought, I'm a cookbook person, and I've always thought to myself, like, we need like a Titanic cookbook that is movie related. And that is exactly what this is. So I think that people will find a lot to make that is, you know, hey, the movie's coming on, being released on the new DVD format this winter. Let's have a watch party. Or if you're like me, just watching it for the 2000th time and making some snacks or that sort of thing. So my family and I did make the Jack Dawson inspired fish fry just this past weekend, just a couple of days ago. And I have to tell you, it's so good. My son, who can at times be a rather picky eater, he's 9, he devoured it and said it was the best fish that he'd ever had. And I said, I can't take any credit. This is Veronica's recipe. And of course, he thinks it's so cool that I know you. I think, tell me a little bit about your kind of relationship with writing about and doing recipes in terms of Jack and Rose, maybe your relationship to the movie a little bit. Was it fun to get to sit down and think about Jack Dawson as a person and like what he would have eaten growing up in Wisconsin? I have to imagine that was a pretty fun process.
It was really fun. And, you know, I had already seen the movie so many times, and then I watched it 3 times to make sure I noted down every reference or anything related to food. And then I went through and watched it again to get a little more context. And one of the things you mentioned made me think of the calamari. And the calamari is a nod to Jack's story that he tells Rose about when he worked on the boats in Monterey, the squid boats in Monterey, California. So I thought, we need to get this in there too. So there's calamari, a recipe for it, which is a little bit more of a modern recipe, but it's a nice way to eat something that's related to Jack's story. So that's a good example. The fish fry is another one. It's such a great story about how he was from Chippewa Falls, and Chippewa Falls is where a really great beer is made, Leinenkugel's, and it's, you know, worldwide distribution, and it's a very good beer. I live right near Chippewa Falls, so I'm very familiar with it. And beer battered fish is such a Wisconsin tradition, so I wanted to include that in honor of Jack and his amazing stories.
As much of a super fan of the movie as I am, I'll be the first to admit that I see the characters so caught in the bubble of the world that James Cameron created that sometimes I don't, like, it's so fun to sit and think, wow, you know, the character of Jack Dawson had this entire life in Wisconsin, which has its own history at the time. And obviously that's where you're from and where you live. And in just like with historical passengers, these characters, their stories are the micro and the macro. And just to think about, wow, what would he have eaten when he was a kid or a teenager, or, you know, in his life that he describes before he meets Rose, what kind of culinary, you know, situations would he have found himself in? I'm sure a lot of like eating things on the run, basically. So it's just such a fun concept. And in terms of, before we move on to another kind of real life passenger, I know we want to talk about, in terms of the movie, I think people are going to pick this book up for holiday shopping, which is so fun. And I'm sure it will be used for many Titanic watch parties, get together, holiday parties. So do you kind of sum up what those more like snack party recipes are like, and what you sort of imagined people kind of doing when you wrote those? It sounds like that was a pretty big impetus for the book, was sort of gathering people together in that scenario.
You really nailed it, LA. There are five sections in the book, and the fifth section is movie snacks. And each one of them, like all the other recipes in the book, was really strategically thought out. All of them are things that would have been popular snacks around 1912, like malted milk balls. They became much more popular many years later, but I shouldn't say many, but a few years later. But malted milk and powder was really popular as sort of a new thing in the Edwardian era. And so the cardamom malted milk balls are a great treat. And then I did want to have little subtle drops of hearts throughout, because it's such a key iconic element of the movie are hearts. And so the raspberry gumdrops are definitely from that era. There's spicy caramel corn, and that is a nod to Popcorn Dan, who made it into this book as well. He's another local hero here in my area where I live in northern Wisconsin. The caramel corn wouldn't have been what Dan would have sold in his popcorn cart, but it definitely is a nice way to present popcorn to your guests. And Dan was in third class. He did not survive, unfortunately. One of the things that really defined the era were things from the Columbian Exposition of 1893, the World's Columbian Exposition, which was in Chicago. And Bertha Palmer from the Palmer House Hilton, it's now the Palmer House Hilton, then it was the Palmer Hotel. She created a special treat in 1893, several years before the Titanic, but continued to resonate throughout the first, 10 to 15 years of the 20th century. And her brownies became hugely popular, as I know you know, and especially as a mom, everyone just loves brownies. And so there's a brownie recipe. Potatoes were so prevalent aboard the Titanic, so there's an idea of having a party with jacket potatoes from the menu and having your guests bring toppings. We wanted to have some snacks that were sort of akin to that Escoffier style of dining. So we included a recipe for gougère, which are the cheesy buns. It's a wonderful bread that in this cookbook is accented with asparagus and mustard. And then deviled eggs. There are tea sandwiches for if you want to have a tea party. And it's just those five food sections in the book are pretty packed full of great ideas like that.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm sadly doing this interview after we've had a weirdly hectic Sunday and have not eaten enough today. So now I'm just, my tummy's grumbling. I hope it doesn't show on the audio. But no, I think that the beauty, I talk about this a lot with listeners and with guests I have, the beauty of that film is, technically, obviously, it's one of the greatest films of all time, but the beauty of it is it's the kind of movie that you want to rewatch over and over, and you want to rewatch it with people. And I get emails from people all over the world all the time that tell me, found your podcast, but really wanted to just share my journey with, Titanic history or with the movie. And a lot of these emails will include really detailed stories people share about creating dinner parties or watching the movie with friends. And this is sort of like a ritual that they do every year, that sort of thing. So I think it is going to be perfect for that scenario for people. I'm very excited about that. I live now in a place that actually has a winter. So I will, some of the, you know, warm, cozy snacks I can enjoy now that I'm not in the heat of Texas. So in terms of moving a little bit to the historical passengers and some more food history, I noticed on, I don't have my full copy yet, but you were kind enough to send me some of the recipes. I noticed on one that beets were really, forefronted, and it got me thinking there's so much to learn about what was on board Titanic, what was served, even beyond what we've talked about, which is a lot at this point, but there, it seems like a history that is bottomless in many ways. So how did you sort of pick which foods to highlight? Like, how did beets come about? Did you notice it on a menu and you happen to like beets? I mean, I'm so interested in your process on how you create these recipes and how you do the historical research on, you know, say an ingredient at the time.
So kind of like the cauliflower, where I noticed it on a menu, or in this case on the menu with the cauliflower, it was in the letter from Adelpha Salfeld to Gertrude. But with the beetroot, I saw it on the menu. It's very probable that it was a fresh beetroot that was cut into bite-sized pieces. And it was not customary at that time to make a salad out of it like we would today. And I really wanted this book to be transferable, these recipes to be transferable to everyday living, so people could feel really comfortable serving this to their friends and not having to fuss a whole lot, but to just, you know, put a little bit into the preparation. And the beet and apple salad is just representative of that. The beetroot, but also, you know, a little embellished with a little bit of apple, because apples were prevalent on the menus as well. And then I garnished the salad with candied nuts, because candied nuts are great on any salad. And I really wanted it to be something, you know, crave-worthy that people would want to make again and again and be excited about sharing it with their friends.
Tell me this. Actually, that's the perfect segue into the next question. So you sent me some photos of a Titanic passenger that I actually don't know a lot about. And as you were talking right there, I was thinking about the story you told me that she actually crossed out something on her menu. I know I'm sort of rambling, but it's so wild to think about these menus, and particularly in first class, people are perusing them, thinking about them, looking forward to them, dining on the ship, particularly in first class, was a huge part of the experience that you were paying for. And so if you'd like to tell us a little bit about, it's Elise, right? Is her first name? Right. I want to pull up the photos, and I can share some of the photos that you sent with listeners too. So that actually ended up being the best segue. So tell me a little bit about Elise's story. I know you mentioned that there's something she crossed out on a menu. And yeah, just I want to let you sort of tell the story. It's such an interesting kind of culinary moment in Titanic history.
It sure is. And it's an example of how we can really piece stories together through these wonderful menus that people like Elise saved. Thank goodness. And before I start talking about Elise, I've got to thank Claude Roulet for the photos that he shared with me and stories. Claude is her great, great, great nephew. He still lives in France. She was from France, and she, was a servant. She was a traveling companion. She was a servant in a job we would have loved. She was asked to go along with the Spencer family from France to New York, and she survived. She was traveling in first class with them, and in her pocket when she got into the lifeboat was the menu from April 12th. So Elise saved the menu from lunch in first class on April 12th. And I thought it was so interesting that she crossed two items off the menu, and they were up at the top. One of the items was eggs Omar Pasha, which is sort of a baked egg tomato, a tomato-y baked egg dish is really a good way to describe it. But the thing that she crossed off that I thought people would relate to the most the other thing is the Welsh rarebit. And Welsh rarebit is something that was created originally in Wales. Same Wales as Prince and Princess of Wales in England. And it's a broiled piece of bread with cheese, a beer or wine soaked cheese sauce over the top, broiled over the top with a little sprinkle of paprika. And I love to add a sliver or slice, a thin slice of pear or apple, maybe a little thin slice of beetroot or something like that to jazz it up a little bit and add a little flavor and some nutrition to it too. It's not a real nutritious meal item. And that might be one of the reasons Elise crossed it off that menu. But I made it this past Thursday and I sent a picture of it to Claude through Facebook and through Messenger. And I said, I think Elise would have liked these. He said, put that maybe.
I know. Well, it's so intriguing to think about why somebody, I mean, that's what I mean about these, you know, little slivers of moments that I love with Titanic passengers, to think about getting inside her head. Like, why did she cross it off? Was it for health reasons? Was it too heavy? Like, even in that little moment, I mean, we'll never know, but it's just, this is why artifacts are such important parts of history too, because to have that menu, to see that line, I mean, just again, just a couple of seconds of her life, but then we can extrapolate so much from it. And I think food and food history is such a wonderful just avenue to take to do that.
Yeah. And it also gave a little context to the fact that, you know, the menus were overwhelming in first class. There was so much to choose from. And I always, you know, took that as an indication that she was trying to be strategic and, okay, no, I don't want that. Maybe I'll want this. And, you know, trying to make sense of it all because there was so much to choose from.
Yeah. And also, I think, like I said, the experience of being on, I think a big part of the experience of being on that ship was, particularly if you were in first class or maybe working for someone in first class, it was an air of the journey was part of the vacation, you know, and I think we forget it. I mean, it was very different in third class, a lot of different experiences there. Although for some, I'm sure it was as well, because third class was so nice and people were on board for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, it was the era of the luxurious ride across the Atlantic. So people would have strategized, I'm going to eat this, I'm excited to try this. And I think details like that are often lost in how we tell the story sometimes. And so you have a recipe for the rarebit in the book, and you've sort of modernized it a little bit as you've been talking about with some of these. Is that kind of the, is it a pretty traditional recipe or is it a little bit modernized?
The traditional Welsh rarebit would fill up a plate. However, I really wanted to focus on this as like appetizer type food, not a main course, but an appetizer. So I adapted it that way. So you can put them on slices of baguette and make them, you know, a 2 or 3 bite appetizer.
Oh, that's perfect. Especially if you're, you know, kind of more a cocktail atmosphere, kind of passing things around. I do appreciate that you have made a lot of these recipes. I mean, they're fun and they're comfort food, but a lot of them do have some whole food forward components. Some, like you mentioned, some plant forward components. As someone who I it's all about moderation, right? But I do try to cook really healthfully for myself and for my family. So I love the sort of modern way that you've made some of these recipes a little healthier as well. I appreciate that. In terms of a passenger like Elise, or I guess she was working for a first class family, but I think it's always fun to think about hosting a first class sort of inspired holiday party. And we talked about this last year. And we also talked about the fact that you can totally do it for third class menu items as well. Just for full disclosure, it is fun for me to talk about the fancy first class items and drinks and that sort of things. But you totally do this for a third class menu as well. If some, and I want to talk about drinks here in a minute, but if someone was to design a Titanic holiday party from this book, do you have a few favorites that you would recommend in that holiday atmosphere? Maybe a, you know, not to put you on the spot, but do you have a suggestion for how to pair some of these recipes maybe for a holiday party? Because we're headed into that time of year, and I know, at least I am, my brain's kind of already there in planning. So,
oh, I have a lot of ideas. And before I mention pairings, first I want to highlight that there is a roast turkey recipe, because there was turkey on the last dinner in second class. There was a turkey dinner, and also with cranberry sauce and stuffing. So you can see where the chef was leaning towards a Thanksgiving dinner. You know, he probably was planning his menu and thinking, well, gee, what's American? Well, Thanksgiving dinner. So he put together this menu, and it happened to be on the 14th, on the last night the Titanic sailed. And so that's why the roast turkey recipe is in here, for a really nice turkey with, you know, lemons. I like to make my turkey with lemons. It just makes it more flavorful and juicy. And cranberries are so easy to make. I didn't even put the recipe in here for just a cup of cranberries, a cup of water, boil it with a cup of sugar, you know, don't overboil, and you've got your cranberry sauce. So that's something to think about. Thanksgiving is coming up, and there is a Thanksgiving theme in this book, because there was a Thanksgiving theme in the second class menu planning, which I thought was really neat. As far as pairings, you know, Thursday at my cooking class here in Wausau, Wisconsin, we had the lamb, and we did the lamb just like it is in the recipe here in the book. We did lollipops, so that each guest has something to hold the lamb with, the bone. It is with a mint sauce, which is really pretty, because you can add as much food coloring to it as you like. So it gives it a nice pretty green, as much green as you want, which is perfect for the holidays. And I would pair that with what we did the other night with the Welsh rarebit sliders, which, you know, aren't as colorful maybe, but are really flavorful with the beer or wine, and also the cheese and paprika and mustard and so forth, so that they're very packed with flavor. And then the salmon and mousseline is one of the most, what I've seen as one of the most replicated menu items. I've seen that at so many different Titanic gatherings and dinners, and it was on the first class dinner and the last night on the Titanic on the 14th. And, you know, salmon is so good. Everybody loves it. And the secret's in the sauce, as it's so true. And in this case, the mousseline sauce is a very simple sauce to make. It's like a hollandaise sauce, but with cream added, a little bit of whipped cream. And it's just got a little bit of tang from the lemon. I love how that lemon is interacted into the sauce from the lemon juice versus squeezing lemon on top of the salmon. It, you know, your guests don't get their hands all full of it. They can just, you know, put the sauce on, and it's just a little bit more cleaner and classier way, I think, to flavor your salmon. So those are a couple of things that I would think of for, you know, must-haves for a past appetizer party or a buffet, if you want to put your food out for people to take as they go through a buffet line. And the other thing that is really, I think, special, a special way to highlight the menu would be the fish. There was there were a lot of references to anchovies, herring, and there's a sauce recipe in the book that is good for any of those sardines, any of those fish. So you could have that with calamari, one of the fish with the sauce with calamari paired with it. And then you could also have, along with that, you could have one of the salads, like the tabbouleh, And the tabbouleh would be good with any of those things. So
it's some color, and that's such a colorful addition too. I was thinking about the photo of that I saw from the book, and I think all of this, I mean, everything, this is, you're so good at what you do. Your cookbooks, I feel like, you know, everything complements each other so beautifully. And so I think that someone will be able to sit down and sort of say like, oh, I could use this book as a meal planner for a holiday party. Try lots of different things, maybe experiment with some of these pairings. And it's, I feel like as I'm a food person and I cook a lot and I'm a cookbook person, and so I really appreciate your recipes for they're clear, they're concise. They're obviously very sophisticated, and you're advocating for using such high quality ingredients, but they are accessible, I feel like, for everybody from a beginner up to someone who cooks all the time. So I just wanted to say, I really appreciate that. I want to, you know, let everybody know these recipes are, you know, some of them are a little more complicated than others, but they're very accessible. I'm so jealous of the process. That honestly sounds like such a fun, I mean, I know it's a lot of work, but it sounds like it was fun. Was it enjoyable to put together?
Oh, super fun. I didn't even feel like I was working.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, and then I'm sure that you, when you're putting a book together like this, how many times do you practice each recipe or run each recipe through sort of a, you know, trial and error process? Like, how long does that take? I imagine it's a lot of time.
It's at least two, and for many of the recipes, three times. And I always watch you can tell that I'm hinting towards other projects that I've been working on. I'll just say for this cookbook, I watched the movie, even though I had already watched it several times, just for the purpose of this book, I watched three times. The first time was to make notes every time I noticed something or, you know, zeroed in on something I wanted to feature. And then the second time was to kind of, did I catch everything? And then the third time was after I tested everything. I wanted to, you know, double check. Did I capture that right? Does this fit? And the way I developed the recipes, same thing. Like I either tried it two or three times, twice if it was something that was adapted from something I'd already made. Like for instance, you know, I've always made clafoutis. So I'm very familiar with it. So I adapted my traditional clafoutis recipe, and then, you know, tweaked it a little bit. And I, wanted to make sure that it turned out right. So I worked it through the second time. But if it was something completely brand new to me, like the hominy, for example, I went through three times with that to make sure everything was just right. And, you know, I definitely enjoyed doing it. I gained a lot of weight.
Oh my God. My husband and I watch a lot of cooking and food shows. And that's what we're always joking about. It's like, if this is your job, you have to, I guess you need to hire a personal trainer. Otherwise, like, I know that if I was doing this, yeah, I think I would just put on like 50 pounds. When you are writing something like this, I imagine it's just, I mean, you are a food person, but I'm sure there are some moments where you maybe don't want to take another bite, but you kind of have to because you're trying things out. And I'm sure by the time you sent it off, final edits, you probably felt good about these recipes and maybe you I've had enough of this particular thing right now, I imagine. So tell me about, just really quickly, I wanted to touch on drinks too, because I actually forgot to tell you before we hit record, but I just made upstairs, I batched the brandy smash recipe that you sent me. So we have a block party this afternoon and I batched that cocktail. And so it's sitting up in our fridge right now. I haven't tried it yet, but I am so excited to try it. So yeah, if you would tell us just a little bit about some of the drinks in the book, I'm really excited to try that. I don't normally drink brandy cocktails, brandy drinks, but it smells really good.
Yeah. And oh, that's wonderful that you batched up the the smash, the brandy smash. That's I can't wait to hear how you liked it. And it'll be interesting to hear how it is in that amount and that, you know.
I know. Yeah, I did. I made my counter very messy because I was like trying to still, you know, muddle and do that. And, you know, when you're batching a cocktail, it kind of changes the, obviously the assembly process a little bit, but I think it translated well. But yeah, I'll definitely take a picture and make sure to send you a message and let you know how it was. But it smells amazing.
Well, the Blue Moon cocktail is on page 111. That tells a lot about how I research and also, you know, how I kind of zero in on stories or zero in on content, how to plan content. I noticed an old newspaper story from around the time the Titanic sailed that featured the Blue Moon cocktail in New York City, even though it is widely thought that the Blue Moon didn't start becoming popular or even known until several years after the Titanic sailed, more of a 1920s drink. But I loved that I found that there was this drink that was already being served in New York City around the Titanic when the Titanic sailed. And I'm always looking for things to do with creme de violet because I just think it's such a neat liqueur. And so I wanted to include the Blue Moon cocktail. And I sort of dedicated it to Violet Jessup. And I know you know who that is, right, L.A.? You know the story of Violet Jessup.
Oh, yeah. And people have been begging me to do a full episode on her, and I will at some point. But there's so much. It's just a plethora, obviously, of sources for her. And if listeners probably know, but she was called the unsinkable Violet Jessup because she worked on Titanic and then also survived other shipwrecks as well. So,
yes. And she was a good friend of John Jack Hume, the third violinist. And, you know, it was her that he ran into in the stairwell right after the Titanic struck the iceberg. And he said, we're just going to try to cheer people up as much as we can, play a little music for them. And she recounted that after the disaster for people to, you know, confirm that there was the music playing. And so her story is really very essential to the Titanic story. And so that Blue Moon cocktail, I'm really pleased that we were able to feature that. The Clover Club is one of my favorite cocktails because it just is so iconic of the Edwardian pre-Prohibition drinks. And it's kind of a girly drink. It's pink.
It's one of my favorites. In fact, the very first episode you ever were on for the podcast, I did a little segment at the end of that episode where I made the Clover Club. And that was the first time I'd had it at that point. And now it's been in rotation in our house for the last couple of years.
Oh, neat. Well, I wanted to bring that one up because this recipe can actually serve double duty because not only is it a delicious drink, and for listeners that don't know, it kind of tastes like a sweet tart. It's just so flavorful and light yet still and just very refreshing. But I wanted to do something a little special. So I garnished it with scented geranium. And you can order scented geranium seeds. You can start forcing them in the spring and then plant them in the summer. And this whole season, LA, I have had no mosquitoes because I have all kinds of scented geranium in my...
Oh my gosh, that's a really good tip. I did not know that. That's incredible.
So you can have a real garden-friendly Clover Club, and that's why I wanted to create my own version and include it in the book. I love the horse's neck. I love that you can... This is on page 117, and it's a really cute name because it's the horse's neck is the cylindrical-shaped lemon peel that you roll around your bar spoon's handle to get a nice little curl on the lemon. And you can make a non-alcoholic version of this for a kitty cocktail for a child. So horse's neck is one of my favorites, and this one is enhanced with a little bit of peach flavor to make it a little bit special for this book. And then this book, LA, closes out The very last recipe on page 118 is the Robert Burns.
Yes. Well, it's crazy because I never talked about or knew anything about Robert Burns in my life. And then talking to you, cocktail, looked up the history, and I kid you not, either he or that cocktail comes up in conversation several times a year now. Like we were in Ohio at someone's house who loves scotch, and it always comes up in conversation now. We were in Central Park, and of course his statue was right there. And so I feel like everywhere I go now is Robert Burns, is following me around. But it is such a good cocktail.
Especially on Burns Night in January, January 25th. And yeah, so I didn't even think of that until the book came out and I had it in my hands. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. End on a high note with the Robert Burns as the last recipe. I love it.
You know, the one that I made, the Brandy Smash, I was reading the intro for each recipe sort of explains how it was inspired by Titanic, how it's related, you know, if it came from a menu or kind of how you were inspired. And I was thinking about, there is that great line that you mentioned, you know, after Rose has come from, you know, the back of the ship and Jack has saved her and Cal and Archibald Gracie are there. And, you know, and Archibald says, oh, it's back to our brandies, eh? You know, and it really, I think brandy is such a drink of that moment in the Edwardian era and would have been, especially in first class, people would have been interacting with it a lot and ordering it a lot. And I think it's just so fun to put something together, and each individual ingredient has its own history. And your books just do such an amazing job of reminding us of that when we're putting a recipe together. So, you know, of course it's for fun. Of course, celebrating the film is fun, but it's also really important to look at history through food. And your books just do such a great job of putting that in our lives. So thank you. It's such a joy.
That really makes me feel happy to hear that, because one of my intents is to keep this on the radar, make sure people continue to tell these stories. And you are so good at that and at keeping these stories alive. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. That's why I do what I do. And I think most listeners know that about me. By now, it's the little stories, it's the little moments I just love sharing. And it's such a delight. I cannot wait to make every single recipe in this book. It's, you know, it's almost like the world is a simulation. This cookbook, I am the person that this cookbook is made for. So tell listeners, okay, so tell us how we can get the cookbook, where they can buy it, and also, let us know, is there anything else fun that you're working on? What are you headed into food-wise for the holidays? Just kind of give us a sense of where to grab the cookbook and then kind of what's on your radar right now.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to share out about a few things. The cookbook is available everywhere right now and online. I know that it's on Amazon. It's definitely available now. It came out on October 3rd. I'm working on another book project that will be out in March. It is not related to the Titanic. And it's another book project that is culinary based and culinary history based. Another book in the fall will be out. So I'm working on those, both of those right now. The finishing touches on one, and the heavy duty work on the body of the context for the other one that'll be out in the fall. And right now I'm just really enjoying talking about this book that just came out. I am so pleased to be able to tell these stories. And so thank you for making that happen.
Oh, of course. I think the last time we talked, You weren't able to reveal what this book was yet. And so I remember you kind of were like, winky, winky, maybe we'll have something else to talk about in the future. And when I found out, when I saw the announcement, months ago that this was your new book, I just like squealed in delight because it's so fun. And of course, I'll always be, keeping up with everything that you're working on and very intrigued about more projects, including historical, takes on historical food and whatever you do, we are following along. Real quickly before we go, what's your absolute favorite recipe from this new book? If you had to pick one baby from all the babies of these recipes, what's one that you just think to yourself, wow, I'm really excited I put that together. I worked on that and I put it out into the world and it's my favorite.
Because I want to, think of what is so true to the Titanic story. And the reason I would pick this is because it shows how well thought out the menus were. And it's the spring lamb and the mint sauce. And it's because it just really is indicative of how well thought out, how much thought and care those menu planners put into these menus. And they didn't just pick things that they liked necessarily, just what they liked. They thought about things like, okay, what's in season right now? They were seasonally eating even back then. It's nothing to us. And so my favorite recipe of all is the lamb chops and that beautiful, pretty green mint sauce.
And it's also really an iconic one in terms of thinking about the movie too, because we think of the scene where we're introduced to Rose and Cal interacting and it's the, lamb there, but of course he said very little mint sauce. So we should have known something was wrong with him then, right? When he said, we should have known. I think that one is probably, I think when people are, if you're a huge fan of the movie, thumbing through the new cookbook, that probably will really scream out at people in terms of referencing the film. And I'll make sure to include all your contact info as usual in the show notes, but we stay in touch on Instagram. So I will definitely be sharing photos as we make more throughout the winter. I can't wait to see everything that you're working on in the future. But listeners, just for this moment, just imagine a Titanic party for the winter. Get cozy. It's also a great holiday book. I wanted to make sure to have you on just as people are starting to think about holiday shopping, because if you have a Titanic person in your life or a cookbook person in your life or just a food person, movie person, this is an incredible holiday gift. So I will be giving it to people as a gift this year. So I think it's perfect timing for that as well. And I just wanted to make sure that we got to talk to you about it and let people know about that heading into the winter. So thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time again.
Thank you for all you do and all your dedication to these stories.